For WMRA News, I'm Christopher Correa, filling in for Bob Levicky. Virginia's tax deadline approaches. Charlottesville council candidates meet. Harrisonburg moves towards interpreters. And a local clinic works to educate individuals facing opioid addiction. This is the WMRA Daily for Friday, April 26, 2019. Virginia taxpayers are only a few days away from a key deadline to pay their state income taxes. The deadline to file state tax returns is Wednesday, May 1st. The state grants an automatic six-month extension to taxpayers who missed the deadline, but taxes still need to be paid by May 1st to avoid penalties and interest. Taxpayers have an added incentive to file their returns on time this year because those who filed before July 1st will be eligible for a one-time tax refund of $110 for individuals and $220 for couples. A change in federal tax law led to a windfall in state taxes, leading state lawmakers to approve refunds earlier this year. The state expects to start sending checks to taxpayers in late August or early September. Democratic candidates for Charlottesville City Council met yesterday in a forum hosted by the League of Women Voters. The Daily Progress reports that all five candidates, Bob Fenwick, Sina McGill, Michael Payne, Brian Pinkston, and Lloyd Snook, were present for the forum, which covered topics frequently mentioned during the campaign, including the best way to address the disproportionate stop and frisks of black residents. All of the candidates touted the idea that the Charlottesville Police Civilian Review Board could be an important tool to addressing problems with policing. Pinkston said an independent civilian review board would be an effective tool if it's truly allowed to be independent. However, he said that supporting the police and allowing Chief Rochelle Brackney to rebuild the department's staff was also necessary. Payne agreed with the idea of an independent board, saying a gesture of good faith would be to give the future board 1% of the police department's budget. He also advocated for equitable policing that better reflects the community. Snook expressed support for the board, but criticized the current state of its bylaws. Addressing another hot topic, all the candidates expressed a distaste for the downtown statues of Confederate Generals Robert E. Lee and Thomas Stonewall Jackson. The Democratic candidates will return to city council chambers at 7 p.m. on May 7th for a forum on environmental issues hosted by the Sierra Club. The event is free and open to the public. Can merit and hard work help Virginians move up the income scale? One new study challenges that idea, as Virginia Public Radio's Michael Pope reports.
Blacks and Hispanics have the highest likelihood of being stuck at the bottom end of the economic scale, or even experiencing downward mobility. That's according to a new study from the journal Demography. Laura Gorin at the Commonwealth Institute says lawmakers have taken some action to remedy this, like making investments in affordable housing and allowing people with court fines to keep their driver's licenses. But
one area that Virginia policymakers haven't taken a real hard look at is increasing the state's minimum wage to make sure that everyone who works a full-time job is able to support a family with dignity.
Senate Republican leader Tommy Norman says raising the minimum wage actually ends up hurting those it's intended to help.
One of the things that they found in Washington as they increased the minimum mandatory wage, that these lower income workers ended up getting less hours to work, so that business individuals could compensate for what the increased cost would be on their customers.
The effort to raise the minimum wage in Virginia may not have made it past lawmakers this year, but now it moves to voters. The issue will be one of the central points of contrast between Republicans and Democrats in the General Assembly election this fall. I'm Michael Pope.
Harrisonburg City Councilman Sal Romero plans to finalize the decision to have an interpreter at the City Council's May 14th meeting. The Daily News Record reports that he hopes council will vote on the issue following the development of a pilot program in the coming week. During this week's meeting, council unanimously passed its three-year priorities, including greater access to language support for council meetings and city services. Council plans to create a language access plan to expand existing language support services and create new ones. The city's communications director, Michael Parks, said that the plan will go before council soon. According to the Harrisonburg Rockingham Free Clinic, in the city alone, nearly 12,000 citizens are non-English language speakers. In January, Romero said that there are many certified interpreters in the city who could volunteer their time for council meetings, and that listening equipment is available for council to rent or borrow for the public to use at meetings. Parks said Thursday that the city has no full-time interpreters, but does have employees who are certified to interpret. Councilman George Hirschman worried that interpreters could be a distraction at meetings and questioned how much they were needed. He said he hopes there would be a pilot program before council decides. Romero has already stated that he intends on having a pilot program to see how beneficial it would be. Mayor Dina Reed said that having interpreters available is a, quote, no-brainer. The Virginia Department of Health is warning of increased risk of hepatitis A cases in Virginia and surrounding states. From partner station WCVE, Charles Fishburne reports.
Hepatitis A is up 132% in Virginia over this time last year.
It's caused by a virus, and it affects the liver primarily.
Marshall Vogt, Division Epidemiologist, Virginia Department of Health, says symptoms include
fever, feeling of tiredness, fatigue, and then gastrointestinal symptoms. So you might have an upset stomach, not much of an appetite, and even diarrhea.
One of the classic symptoms is jaundice, which is a yellowing of the skin or eyes. It can spread person to person or through contaminated food or drink. The Virginia Department of Health is recommending hand washing and a vaccine.
It's preventable with a vaccine. It's a two-dose series, but that first dose of vaccine is 95% effective.
Charles Fishburne, WMRA News.
And finally today, the opioid crisis is a nationwide issue that's also affected individuals in the Shenandoah Valley. From chronic pain sufferers who can no longer get the medication they need to stories of addiction, dependency, and death. Alan Stewart is the program director at the New Season Harrisonburg Metro Treatment Center, working to educate individuals facing opioid problems. He spoke with WMRA's Chris Boros, who asked him to describe how the crisis is affecting people in the Valley and Central Virginia.
One of the things we're seeing really everywhere in the United States, but absolutely in Rockingham County and Shenandoah Valley and Harrisonburg, we're seeing large numbers of folks going to emergency rooms with opiate overdoses, and we're seeing people dying. In America, we see that there's about 115 people dying a day. Our personal clinic, the New Season Harrisonburg Treatment Center, we have 285 active patients right now, and we're growing by about 10 patients a month. So I've had outreach from all number of community stakeholders, from the Rockingham County Sheriff's Department, from the Middle River Jail. Everyone's really sort of scratching their heads and saying, what can we do to help relieve some of this crisis? Because the people who are dying are not criminals. You know, these are mothers, fathers, people's children, folks with lives, with families, with wives.
What is someone normally going through when they say to themselves, I think I've got a problem, I need help?
No one comes to addiction treatment because life went well. What that would look like is either you're using drugs recreationally or you're taking prescription painkillers as prescribed by your physician to deal with a legitimate medical issue. But over time, because they develop a tolerance, now the prescription that's available to them is not meeting the need of pain that they have. So perhaps they're purchasing additional pills on the street. Perhaps they're using heroin to supplement. Perhaps they've taken all of their medication before their prescription ran out. And then the doctor has noticed that and cut them off. And so now they're seeking options on the street. But whatever the problem, people find themselves in the position of being addicted without starting down a path that you would traditionally think leads there. You know, for example, 2 to 3 times as many people who die of opioid overdoses in Rockingham County die of prescription drug overdoses, not of heroin.
If someone's addicted to opioids, like, what does it do to their body? What's going on inside?
That's an awesome question. If you had diabetes, no one, you know, you chose to eat sugar, right? But no one would call you names or attempt to restrict your access to care, right? If you need insulin, here's insulin. With addiction, the short version is that the human brain seeks pleasure, and when it finds a greater reward than expected, at a biological level, it locks into that and it remembers that and it prioritizes that above other things. So that pleasure that you feel when you have a greater than reward than expected and you come home and someone's cooked a nice dinner for you, that is your midbrain talking to your cortex. Here's the problem. Opiates radically elevate that pleasure response. So what starts to happen with opiate addiction And I've seen this more so than with other addictive substances, because I've worked in treatment for all substances, not just opiates. The brain will prioritize the drug over your family, your morality, the law, because when you're in withdrawal, what the body thinks is that it's dying. So, you know, this kind of guides me kind of around the corner to, well, so why medication-assisted treatment? Medication-assisted treatment provides hope to people who are struggling in this cycle. And what we see is that after a year, about 90% of our clients are opiate-free, and about 73% of our clients are either enrolled in school or full-time employed. So what we're really talking about is not just about drug treatment. It's about getting your life back. You know, so what medication-assisted treatment is, a medication that will take someone out of withdrawal, does not get them high, and sits on their opiate receptors in a way that prevents them from getting effectively high off of illicit opiates.
If there's one thing that you think everyone needs to do to like fix this problem, like what would it be?
I think we have to change the way that we associate stigma with this population. And so sometimes communities will say, well, we don't want a methadone clinic in our community. And they're associating the symptoms of addiction with the presence of the treatment. You know, you wouldn't get angry that people with heart conditions were surrounding the cardiology clinic. And so it's important to realize that, you know, when you have a treatment center in your community, the rates for all sorts of negative things go down, right? Crime rates go down, prostitution rates go down. And so I think that if people were not afraid of pushback from their employers and from their community and from their family members, then more folks would seek legitimate treatment and get better. That, I guess that would be my wish. People would take a look at the human beings who are suffering and treat them in that way rather than stigmatizing or judging them.
Alan Stewart is the program director at the Harrisonburg Metro Treatment Center. More information on their practice is at WMRA.org. Alan, thanks so much.
Thank you.
And I'm Christopher Correa. Thanks for listening and enjoy your Friday.